Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event of the evening, sponsored by Glovebox, the client experience platform for independent insurance agents, agency branded, carrier connected. And now, this is the moment podcast fans around the world have been waiting for, live from Glovebox HQ by way of Denver, Colorado. It's time for the Cease and Desist Podcast.
All right, back with another podcast with you fellas. Andy, what's up, man?
You know, it's nice to get a good week of work in and be able to do a recording like this. We can actually enjoy ourselves with a glass of whiskey, and it feels nice.
I'll tell you what, man, we made it. It's been a long week.
Yeah, so. And lots of objectives on the table for next week, so it's good to kind of break it up a little bit. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, buddy. So. I'm going to jump right in, man. The Bucks, not my Bucks.
Caitlin's. You were about to claim them.
Well, I have claimed them because the Suns beat my Nuggets, which I'm upset about.
Yeah.
But we got Caitlin here, who is a Wisconsin native, and she loves the Bucks, and I have adopted the Bucks as a fair weather fan. So
yeah. And anytime we're looking at the NBA playoffs, it's good to kind of live through somebody else if your team's not in it.
So yeah.
We're doing that here in the office.
Heck yeah, man! Caitlin checked out the local Bucks bar here in Denver, and she said it was lit.
Rowdy. I loved getting that message on Saturday night.
Definitely. Well, look, let's talk about the NBA as a whole. Let me ask you this. Do you think basketball, and specifically the NBA, is better now than it's ever been?
Ooh.
Oh, my gosh.
Let me context.
You're going to offend somebody.
Well, let me context this question. I'm not talking about talent. I'm talking about amount of talent. There's more good players now than there ever has been.
That seems to be pretty obvious, but yeah. You know, I here's the deal, is the court is spread out, not literally, but your offense is a full,
figuratively.
Your offense is
I'll
taking
the
up
keys of the store.
Your offense is taking up the full half court, right? So you spread out the offense. You're doing more pick and rolls. You're doing more, obviously, 3-point shots or, you know, part of the primary.
Shooting deeper now.
Yeah, it's so primary
Steph,
part of the offense.
Steph Curry effect has hit the NBA.
I mean, I'm Trae Young. It's going to keep going. Like, you're going to start to see players like that.
Dame.
Who, you know,
it's Dame Dollar. Yep.
That's definitely love a good argument because, like, back when, you know, we were growing up, when it was the Bulls, the Lakers, of course, the Lakers, it was a hard sport, you know.
It was, straight physical.
Physical, yeah. Which.
A lot of more centers that were dominating.
Dominant. Big men are still super dominant.
Karl Malone, of course.
The mailman. Former Laker, as we know.
Is he really?
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
Come on now.
What?
Everyone goes to the LA to win a championship. Jesus. Everybody does.
Oh, are they the feeder team to the
Gary
better team?
Gary Payton was on
teams?
That team as well.
The Glove?
The Glove.
Oh, my
They lost
God.
That year, though.
Jody Meeks. Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. That's Caruso. A tough question because it's, I mean, talent-wise, obviously, it's way better. It's way better. People are so much better.
If someone has a different opinion on that exact topic, let us know because I don't think you're going to have a good
The topic that is fun is like, you know, it's the one everyone would talk about. It's
LeBron.
The Bulls.
Oh, sorry. It's the,
I mean, that's an easy one. The Bulls, you know, those are, I mean, come on. Who would, the Bulls and maybe some of the old Lakers, some of the like the old Celtics teams.
Yep.
Those are the ones you'd bring up, and then you start to bring up, obviously, newer generation Laker teams, of course.
The Denver Nuggets, of course.
The Denver Nuggets of this last playoff season.
The dynasty.
And, the Golden State, you know, the Heat. You know, how would those teams have fared next to each other?
Well, right. It's just, in my opinion, it's nice to see mid-market teams succeeding. Right now,
it's true.
Milwaukee and Phoenix in the finals, and that's awesome.
Yeah.
And, you know, thank God the Lakers were out early, and they really didn't even make the playoffs, let's be honest. A playing game.
We both lost to the same team, though, right? You're a Nugget fan. I'm a Laker fan.
I mean, it's going to be everybody lost to the same team. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Caitlin. That's all right.
Caitlin's from Wisconsin, and that's...
Sorry, Milwaukee. Unless, maybe they'll prove us wrong.
I'm pumped.
I'm going to bet on that.
I want the Suns. I want Chris Paul to get one.
Yeah.
Of course.
He deserves one.
Point God.
Plus that guy that got in the fight at the in Denver, you want him to get his championship rings.
Suns in four. I bet they give him a ring,
so
too.
Funny. No way.
Oh, dude, that's part of the action bet that I'm, the app that I'm building.
Oh. Do they give him a ring?
Do
or
they
not?
Give him a ring?
Do they honor him? They're going to hang his jersey in the rafters?
Amazing. I saw Jamal Murray took a picture with him the other day.
That is hilarious.
If you don't know what we're talking about, so in the stands of the Nuggets game 2 or 3, the Suns fan was in Denver.
It would have been 3 because 2 was in Phoenix.
Yep, fair enough. Yeah. Suns fan in Denver, probably like 10 rows up, whatever, talking mad shit. And this Nuggets fan got pissed at him, spilled a drink on him on purpose. And they got in a fight. And the Suns dude whooped the Nuggets dude's ass. And right when he's done with the fight, the Nuggets dude's walking away. And he goes, Suns in 4. Throws up a big 4. And, of course, the Suns swept the Nuggets. And so
it went viral.
You got to go watch the video. But, look, I'm going to put this simply.
Ooh, he's going to go there.
If you don't know how to fight, don't start a fight. Like, that guy had no business fighting.
Yeah, that is true.
Like, he was laying on his chest like it was his mother. And getting uppercutted for like 10 seconds straight.
Yeah, like, you got to move your body a little.
If you don't know how to fight, don't pick a fight. That's just the reality of it. And that was a perfect example. So go look up that video.
And don't get in fights anyway. There's really no reason.
No, of course not. What are you so angry about? I mean, I saw Andy at a Jimmy John's
moment. Okay, so can we talk about that Jimmy John's moment for a second? It was 1:32 a.m.
I need to know what's the backstory.
Lawrence, Kansas. Shout out Jayhawks. You're at Jimmy John's. You're a little drunk. It just happens, you know. And you're standing in line. You want your sandwich. And it was a long line. There was probably 30 people in line.
So it wasn't freaky fast.
And, you know, it was rush hour. It's 2 a.m. in a college town. Well, this guy behind me, maybe he was in front of me. It doesn't really matter. He was pissing me off. I wouldn't stop talking shit. And I was like, guy, you're little and you're annoying and you have glasses. And sorry, it's nothing to do with the glasses.
Come on.
Well, the part where the glasses come in is...
Because you knocked them
I didn't want to hurt the little guy. And so I said, God damn it. And I gave him a little... instead of punching him, I slapped him because I didn't want to hurt him. And his glasses fell off.
Yeah, no, you
did.
Didn't,
they break?
You didn't hurt him.
No,
you
just step on him. I actually picked down up the glasses and handed them back and said, sorry, but like, come on.
You didn't
you
hurt him.
You said sorry, no.
But you embarrassed
him. Well, yeah, because I hurt him. Or, you know, I didn't want to hurt
him. You really just demoralized this guy. Not only did you slap him,
he had it coming.
You were there, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You were there?
Yeah. He had it coming. Oh, yeah. Andy reached across because Andy has like gigantic long arms. He's like, go, go, gadget. He reached across like 4 people's heads to smack this dude. And his glasses were like, you remember the guy in The Scientist in Independence Day when he's like,
oh, yeah,
his glasses are half off? That was this guy's face after Andy smacked him.
Boom. Roasted. It had to happen. All right.
You have a lot of these like random scuffle
Andy's
situations.
Like the chillest, nicest guy in the world until he's not. That's Andy.
Yeah.
That's funny. I would never get in a fight.
Yeah.
I mean, unless my family, you know. Probably not either of you guys. If you guys were in trouble, I'd probably just like sit there.
Now hold on.
That's very comfortable.
I don't want to.
How long have you been training?
It's been probably 5 years now.
So you know what you're doing.
I wouldn't say that.
And I would say 95% of the population, you'd whoop that ass.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know about that.
I mean, your head movement is fantastic.
It's getting good.
Yeah.
So Ryan and Sean train often, and they've both been training for 5+. And I'd say you could both step in. Step into the
and by training he means that we play the video game UFC. Yeah.
My guy's at a 95% effective rate. Now I remember I started training. I always wanted to, but I was always very nervous about like going to the gym. I didn't want to get like, you know, hit or anything. And then Ryan was going to the UFC gym, and then decided to go to Krav Maga.
Yep.
Then I went to Krav Maga because I was like, all right, someone else there, I'll go do it. Like you don't feel like out of place, uncomfortable. I did puke in the very first class halfway through. I had to go outside and throw up in the parking lot
because it
was quite a bit more intense.
But it was hard.
It was hard. Yeah. It was super hard. They weren't messing around.
Yeah.
And definitely got addicted like right away. Probably because the very first time they were like, all right, hit this bag with a punch. And I remember my wrist rolling like right over. And I was like, and I had just had Scarlett, you know, so she was probably like, I don't know, 3-4 months old, baby girl. I was like, oh. I can't really, you know, I don't feel like a dad right now. I don't feel like, yeah,
children.
Like if I ever have to defend my family, that is terrible. And so I got addicted. I started going at lunch, you know, because it was like 2 minutes from our office. I'd skip lunch. I'd go work out, go after work. And then like 5 months in, you can only take getting like choked by people so many times, you know. And then we started going to a gym around here and doing kickboxing. And then you actually joined for...
About a year.
For a little
less.
Bit. And yeah. I remember your wife was just a little bit better
she
than you.
She just is. You know?
Yeah. She was
shout
just
out
a
Kelsey.
More.
Your wife is an animal.
Yeah.
Like most people come in and like... Most people don't know how to punch. Like they throw this loopy punch. And like if you are gonna get in a fight, like that's just your gig, you know everybody's gonna load up with their offhand and try to throw this loopy punch at you, and that's how most people punch. Like it's true. Amazing. And so that's how they come in and punch.
Yeah, she. I mean, I married up on that side, like for sure. And just
she'll take care of you.
Backstory: like her ex boyfriend's a high profile UFC fighter, so whatever that's worth.
There you go.
Yeah, but, training's been the best though.
Yeah. Now, if you haven't done Krav Maga, it is the most complex, bizarre, difficult sport I've ever done, and here's why. You're literally throwing punches with the plumber from around the corner. Or the librarian, like 60-year-old woman that just wants to get aggression out, and the dynamics of the crowd there, is insane.
Yeah,
like you're like easy, Sally, like easy.
No one really knows how hard.
I gotta work tomorrow, Sally. Like, I'm not trying to get a black eye from you.
I'm just here to get a little pump.
And then you got the 17-year-old that's like, you know. In better shape than all of us.
Because, yeah, for sure.
You know, when you're 17, it was like, it was crazy. I was like, the dynamics of this gym are insane. Like the people that you're sparring with.
I will say, after the end of that workout, you feel better than
ever. It's so good.
It's the best feeling.
I remember when we went through that, certification to be able to go to like the advanced classes.
Yeah.
And I remember being like, oh my God, we're going to do like sparring. And they're like, you should get some headgear. And I was like, very nervous. I was like, I don't know if I want to do this. And then we started training with Gwen.
Yep.
And it was like, cool workouts. I mean, they were fun, but then it was like sparring, and I was like, all right, literally every single Wednesday I come home at 7:30 in the morning to go back to the office to sell insurance, but I had a bloody nose on my way home because Ryan would sock me in the nose, like, you know. But now it's like my favorite thing to do is like light sparring. Like it is my favorite. Like literally yesterday I'm sparring with Yusef, and I'm terrible at it. Obviously, I'm trying to get like one thing in, but it's like, clearly, he's a UFC fighter, so he knows what he's doing, and I'm not good. So he can see it coming a mile away. He must have landed probably 10 or 15 just like, you know, not even like anything, like a light tap, but like so square on my face that I was like, oh, dude, what is like, what am I not doing here? How am I missing? How are you even hitting me in the face here? But you're laughing about it. Like you get...
I know exactly what you're talking about.
You get tagged and you laugh.
But when you spar with Yusef... and you actually land punches on him, you're like, oh, I got you there, man.
You do
like,
feel good.
Yeah.
That's why I hit him in the leg once every single round we spar.
He got me in the ribs yesterday with an uppercut, knocked the wind out of me.
Like, really?
You got me good, man. Yeah, but you're right. Like, once you get comfortable with sparring, it's super fun.
It's my favorite
thing. But you do have a pillow nose. You do.
Just please. He got me like 3 weeks ago, and he'll like this. We're not even sparring yet. We're hitting pads. And I like kind of just missed the combo. He like, you know, I just didn't do it quite right. And so he hit the pad, which hit my hand into my own face. And my nose started bleeding.
Because of course. How many stories of that have
happened? I was like, dude, my nose is bleeding. We're not even sparring. I made my own nose bleed.
Does that sound familiar in this office? Oh my goodness.
Who?
Sorry, just anything data related? You feel like you're getting your nose kicked in?
Oh God, every day.
Oh, so we'll talk about data.
That's a full podcast. We'll bring Thomas on for that one.
Ooh, so Thomas is our third-party developer helping us out, been helping us since the beginning, and that guy, love to hear his story about us.
Yeah, he's been great.
Man.
Yeah, so let me ask you this. If you were still an independent agent, what would you do differently now than you did 3 years ago? Like, what would you be doing different with your business now that wasn't maybe available to us, or just in hindsight, what would you do differently?
So... I have a decent relationship with a ton of mortgage brokers specifically, and I would just straight up ask them, what do you need from me to make sure I get every lead in your pipeline? Because I have a good enough relationship with so many of them. You just ask them, and you become friends. You become friends with so many of them. You know, at any given time, I had 150 relationships with mortgage brokers, and that was our main source of referrals. Just ask them, what can I do? I'm going to take you out for a drink, golf, whatever, happy hour, and... just, you know, we're buddies. I want to do best for you. I'm your partner. Am I your partner, first and foremost? Second, like, what am I going to do to get business from you? All of your leads. Every part of your process, I am your guy. So just introduce me and take it over.
I like that. Like, I've been training a lot of agents, and that's the number one thing. It's like, when I call them, they're, like, trying to think of a witty way to say something and, like, get in their process. And it's so hard to train them out of, like, they're professionals too. They're adults. They know what you want. Don't beat around the bush. and just ask them, what do I got to do here? And then let them tell you. I specifically remember this conversation with you. I was going in when you were training me.
Yep.
I was like, I'm going to meet this lender. Like, what do you think? And you were like, why don't you just ask him how many deals he's doing every month? And I was like, whoa, that's like, are you sure? That's pretty,
a little aggressive.
That's pretty invasive, don't you think? And you're like, why? And I started thinking about it, and I got there, and I was like, I remember specifically, it was at the Arapaho Yosemite Einsteins, you know?
Yeah.
Because I was super nervous to ask the question. I don't know. Like, now I look back, I'm like, that's so silly.
Yeah.
And I asked him, and he's like, oh, I'm doing, like, 2 loans a month. And I was like, check, please.
Did your phone ring? Like, oh, I got to go.
But that was when I knew. I was like, oh, okay. Like, why am I worried about who this person is? Not because he wasn't doing that many loans. Like, you have a different response for that. It's like, look, well, where are you looking to go?
Yeah.
You're looking to get to 2. Great. Where are you looking to get to? 6, 5, 20, whatever it is, I can help you get there. And then I remember talking to another big lender, and I was like, how many loans are you doing every month? And he was like, oh, I'm doing like 25 or 30. And I was like,
okay.
So you're worth my time.
You know, and then they get it. The people that you think are big, you think you're nervous around, to a lot of new agents think they're going to be a little bit nervous around them, but they are nervous around them. It's like, these guys are professionals. They are looking to expand their business and shave off the seconds here, shave it off there, and they're looking for someone like you.
Yeah. I'm actually glad you said that. I had a spreadsheet of all my referral partners in one place. I would literally ask them every month how many deals they expect that month, and that's how many leads I would expect from them.
Yep.
And that's in the column next to their name.
You should have added like a 2 on it.
And I would make sure the goal was the number that they actually are doing, and the receivables are the actual leads I got. And
that
I would,
was good.
I would tell them.
You audited it?
I at swear. The end of
the month? Like, look, you told me that you were going to do 10, and
if
I got
anyone
5.
Wants that spreadsheet, I was literally looking at it today. And I saw that the way I used to track those leads, and I would ask them. And it's not that hard, and it's not a big
deal. And that hasn't changed.
It's not.
No. That has not changed.
No.
Like, well, as long as you're backing it up on the back end.
Let me ask you this.
You got to be good at your job.
So do you think a lot of agents waste their time on mortgage brokers that aren't looking to grow and they're just looking to meet?
100%.
They just want bagels and Einsteins with Sean Mulhern?
I mean.
Which is that's a hot date.
I'll talk about aliens with you all day.
That's a hot date.
You know? I think so. Yeah. I mean, if you don't ask, you don't know.
Yeah.
A lot of people dress the part,
yeah.
You know, and they're not producing. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just know your audience. It's the exact same thing on sales. Knowing when to walk business and cut that time short is
absolutely
super valuable.
So there's this concept of embeddable insurance that is not coming. It's here. It's here. Like, embeddable insurance is happening. If agents are not aware of it, if they're not educated on it, please do so. Like, definitely go research it. But there's this concept of, like, Tandy, to your point, mortgage broker has deals, you're their partner. How do you make sure that they get you all those deals in a way that's easy for them and good for you, that makes you embeddable in their process? Because if agents don't do a better job embedding themselves in the process, somebody else or something else will, whether it's tech or another
agent.
Well,
let's start here first. Talk to the audience about what embeddable insurance actually means.
So it's putting you at the point of purchase for, call it a home, right? Let's look at the process of buying a home, and let's speak about a mortgage specifically, right? All of the things that you need to do to satisfy that mortgage to buy that house, insurance is part of the process. So how do you make yourself injectable into that process to where, oh, it's just natural. Like, my buyers do this, they do this, and then they call Andy, or they email Andy, or they use this technology and they get a quote, or whatever that embeddable experience is, that's embeddable.
That's a good, like, jump off to even have agents think about right now. Like, how do your referral partners send you business?
Right.
Unless you're telling them in every email and every time you talk to them, they don't remember because they're running their own job.
Yeah. I'll tell you the worst way to do it is just to email, have the lender email the client to reach out to agent without the agent even knowing that happened. That's terrible. Worst.
Especially as easy as it is to shop for insurance now, that client would much rather jump online and buy through Hippo than call you, go through your 30-minute app process to wait 2 days to get a quote back that may or may not be good. So think about that. Like, this is something that independent agents need to be thinking about, of how can we make it easier for the prospect to get what they need faster every single time? Because if we don't do it, somebody else will, I promise. And they're already doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
do you think we might work on something like that?
Ooh.
That's interesting.
Maybe for another time.
Yeah, for another day. But you know, it's inevitable. Like, more mortgage shops are creating their own insurance agencies, and, you know, the lender is going to be incentivized to use the in-house insurance, and that's coming. I've seen independent agencies that are 100% digital that are connecting with the servicing mortgage company. So you got your retail mortgage shop and then the servicer. They're literally partnering with the servicer, and they're emailing every single mortgage client at renewal to say, hey, you should shop your insurance. Like,
that's genius.
Yeah, that of course is genius. It is.
It really is.
Like, and why would you not shop?
This is what's coming, and this
if you're offered and it's easy, you're going to shop.
Yep. So right now, it's of the utmost importance that agents look to leverage technology to embed themselves in their relationships, or that relationship, I promise you, will be gone. It's only a matter of time. So
you're onto something.
And, you know,
have a lovely day.
Have a lovely day.
Bye-bye, client.
You know what's tough right now for independent agents that are younger in their career? They're in their first, call it 10 years or less, is mom and dad run the agency. And yeah, they want to bring on tech.
Yeah, that's
and they're
tough.
Very curious about what it can do for them, but there's not much they can actually do to bring it in. So
what is our biggest reason why we don't want call close? What's that?
I got to ask my mom.
It is literally,
now, hold on. Why is mom not on this conversation?
It is literally a reason in our HubSpot of why we didn't sell that deal on the first
close.
I have to
lost.
Ask my mom or dad.
Yeah. That happens, what, 25% of the time?
It is funny.
I mean, it's real. It's real. It's totally There's real, a though. Handoff right yeah. now between these agencies to the younger generation.
Yeah,
I mean, we were a G2.
We
were a G2.
We did it.
Yeah.
Oh, and, my God, we did it.
Yeah. Yeah. Jesus.
We thought we were the decision makers till we weren't.
Like, shout out Colorado Insurance.
Yeah, man. My only decision-making ability was what kind of sandwich I wanted for lunch. That was my decision.
Hey, I got to help with the groceries ordering. Like, I would help out with that.
Yeah. So I was that.
You just had a lot of responsibility.
I was that agent of, this is awesome. Let's ask dad. That was us.
Love you, dad.
Yeah. Yeah. But to your point, that's, I think we're going to see a really neat transition if the more seasoned generations allow the younger generations to actually lead these agencies into the next decade of insurance.
It's
I think it's going to be nice to see. It's exciting.
It's a trust thing.
Yeah.
You know,
a trust tree.
With the nest, are we not?
No, I mean, it's just that if they've been doing it for long enough, they know the system processes, you know, how to retain clients, obviously bring them in. It's just that if you don't hand over the keys at some point, it's never going to happen. And we know what that's like. And at the end of the day, if you're not helping bring tech into your agency, back to what we were talking about, you're probably not going to get to where you need to be in the future. And so 2021 is an obvious opportunity to kind of make that happen.
Yeah, I never answered it, but if going back, it would have been tech.
Yeah.
Spending a little bit more time on the what is going to streamline my process a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because I did it with, like, how do I take the app faster?
Right.
What question do I ask better?
Yep.
But, like, even little things like, what email do I send here? Like, all of the operations. And the one that never got talked about and I never even thought about was service. You know, that was a big one. But it literally, any tech that you can think of and look at, you should be looking at everything. You know, and look at how much time would this save me per client,
yeah,
times how many leads, how many clients do we deal with on a monthly basis. I mean, it becomes pretty obvious if it's saving you 10 seconds a client, times that by how many clients are doing that activity every month, and then that's a number. And then that number can be reapplied, reallocated to something more important, more revenue generating.
Yeah, I think it used to just crush me to listen to agents take an application over the phone. If an application over the phone is taking you more than 20 minutes, 15 minutes,
10 minutes,
like, you are overselling and you are trying to make friends. And, you know, this is no new friends at this point.
How many?
No new.
My God.
How many stories and how many specific humans can you think of right now?
My God. It's like
that did that at the
agency.
They
should have a post on it on asking agencies, how long does it take your average agent to take a nap?
Great.
I guarantee most people are over 10 minutes.
And even easily. So, like, Sean, to your point, take the time from taking the app, putting it into the Raider, fumbling through the Raider and the carrier, fine-tuning five different quotes,
this trying to find
the perfect like package for that client. Like, how long does that take? And there should be a time limit on that. You know.
All right, our time is up. I got to get off the phone. Okay, goodbye. No, in all seriousness, like I have one person in mind with one scenario specifically when we was kind of managing a sales team, and it was like, goodness gracious, get off the freaking phone. You've been on the phone with this person for 45 minutes. I guarantee they don't care enough about their one freaking quote that they're actually shopping around. You're not going to win the business at this point. Rapport is one thing. At this point, you might as well go date the person because you're doing something.
I don't know. Maybe they were. Did you ever follow up?
No.
You don't know. They could have. They could be happily married right now.
Andy, to your point, there is definitely a skill set in developing immediate rapport with a prospect without spending 45 minutes.
It should only take a couple minutes.
Not even a minute. Oh, you're from Pittsburgh? My mom's from Pittsburgh. That's amazing.
Whether or not your mom's from Pittsburgh or not.
Okay, cool. What kind of house are you buying? Let's jump in.
Dogs, sports teams. Okay.
It's keeping them on the straight line.
It's keeping them on the straight line.
The Jordan Belfort book.
But to some degree, I think a lot of agents enjoy wasting time because it makes them feel important. It makes them feel like they're being productive. Because
they don't have enough leads.
Right. Exactly. They don't have enough leads. And not only that, they don't want to go do the work, or they're afraid to go do the work to get more leads. And I think a lot of agents can be honest with themselves when they say they're doing work to just do work.
There's a very big difference between action and activity.
Right.
Like, are you just doing activity? Or are you like taking action on your business?
Right.
Like, I could check my email a lot. I'm fine. I could do that all day. No problem.
You could recheck your email.
I could recheck it. But I know from my day selling, like, there are certain levers that are action. These are the ones that you do, and these turn into money.
Right.
Checking your email is not one of them. Quoting technically kind of is one of them, but, you know, in a sense, it's not. You don't do that during the day unless you absolutely have to.
After hours.
But when you pick up the phone and call a lender, that is making you money. Taking an app is not making you money.
No.
Like that, I mean, it can turn into money, but you need to do it as fast as possible, or you need to figure out a digital way to do it, or do it through email. But that was why every single day, the first thing I did, no matter how busy I was, is I did marketing calls. The foot was on the gas, no matter how busy I was, always making the same amount of calls every single day. It's an hour, you know. You can't do it for an hour...
And I can actually attest to this. You know, people say they pound the phones. Sean pounded the phones. Like, I would come in at 7 a.m. and Sean would already have been there for an hour in commercial calling, you know, contractors in Missouri trying to get leads. And he was the producer on the team that everybody loved to hate. And not because it's Sean, but because he was putting up $200-300K a month in new business. And they were like, what is he doing? I don't understand. Like, he's so lucky. He's so lucky he's getting all these deals. And like, where are they all coming from?
It's a damn shame you didn't do commercial for longer, Sean.
You know.
But like, the concepts are very concrete. Like, this is not complex. It's like,
do these things. Don't reinvent the wheel.
Yeah. And literally, you'd be crazy to... analyze the value of just picking up the phone.
Yep.
Like, and I think David Carruthers would probably agree, you know, killing commercial, shout out to D Carruthers, but just picking up the phone is 75% of the work. Like, and most people don't do that, you know? So
I used to team up. Actually, it was like, I scheduled an hour for every agent. We'd bring them in a room. We'd cold call for an hour, each one of them. And I'd do half of the calls. They do half the calls. I'd show them how I would do it. They would tell me how they would do it. We'd assess which pitch was better. Cold calls are vital.
They really are.
Yeah.
They're a rush.
Do you, because I think they're definitely quite a bit more valuable on the commercial side.
Sure.
If I'm going to spend my time on personal lines, I'm cold calling referral sources.
Yeah, a little bit different.
Yeah. I want to tap the wells, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so. I talked to, again, going back to when you train agents, the process is simple. Call referral partners, get the lead, quote it as fast as possible, learn when to walk it faster, stop trying to find the perfect package, because when you spent 30 minutes trying to find the perfect package, that's 30 minutes you didn't call, and in that 30 minutes, you might have got one new lender who might have been a guy that sends you 5 leads a month for the next 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, so knowing when to walk that business, but yeah, you can't do it by not picking up the phone. You just can't do it. You can't do it through email. You can't do it through anything but... some sort of like hearing my voice, talking to you, meeting for coffee. showing them who you are. And too many people are afraid to do it. And so they think they're going back to action versus activity. They're, well, I was working on this spreadsheet. You know, I'm working on getting my constant contact set up.
I was goal planning for next month.
I goal planned. Goal
planned. Goals to pick up the phone.
Yep, there it was. Did you hit your goal?
Something interesting on lead generation in particular. I remember your brother and Ryan.
And my brother.
If I'm not mistaken, you trained Ryan Mullen, right?
I trained Sean, who trained Ryan.
He trained the trainer.
I trained the trainer. Yeah.
So I just remember your brother's story. He was a new agent, didn't know what he was doing, but for 3 whole months before he sold pretty much a policy, all he did was lead generation and just built a sweet network of people that basically is lasting his whole career.
I will attest to that because I ran appointments with him one day and I stepped in gum on the floor of his Trailblazer.
He hasn't gotten over it.
What the hell?
Damn it.
I had to walk into this mortgage office with gum on my shoe.
Oh, you've had worse with mortgage brokers.
I mean, I do remember that because he was calling me. That was when I was as busy as I've ever been. And he'd call me for questions and I was like,
get to it.
What are you Your brother's talking a talker. About? I mean, he's great. Yeah, he's super good with people, but he would be putting up, you know, it wasn't a lot of production the first few months that you get in. It's never a lot of production, but I remember telling him specifically, the production number has nothing to, it doesn't even matter.
Nope.
For 6 months, it doesn't make any difference in the world. The only number we're looking at is how many people you're reaching out to and how many leads did
you
get.
How many mortgage brokers did you talk to? That's the number that matters.
Why do we keep harping on mortgage brokers? I wonder.
Low-hanging fruit, man. Don't reinvent the wheel. It's not complicated.
Like, go get them. Yeah, he would do like 8,000, 10,000, 8,000, 12,000. And I remember his first 30K month, which was, you know, is a good month.
This is personal lines premium.
Personal lines, yeah. Personal lines premium. His first 30K month, it was like, I can't remember how many months in it was, but a lot of people were like, yeah, he's not doing anything. And I kept telling him, I was like, don't listen to any of these people. Like, are you going to take their advice? Like, they've not hit the level that you're trying to get to. And as soon as he hit that 30K, I don't think he ever drop below that, and then he had like 3-4 years in a row above 50-60,000 in premium every single month.
What do you think his book is at right now?
I'm pretty sure it's at like $3.5-4 million.
Shit.
You know?
I know, and he's got a big house. A lot of kids.
He's got almost a full basketball team of kids.
And he's making 80% you know? New and renewal. Shout out.
You know, and granted he's life. Super busy. He's still crushing it. And but he's, you know, he's working, I wouldn't say full time because he's got a full time family, but he's put himself in the position where it's like, oh, I've got money coming in. I have leads coming in, and he's passing them off to other people to work. And it's like, look, you crushed it for 3 years. Like, you worked your ass off for 3 years.
How
on
sad
the
is
right
it that
things.
It's all it takes is a few good
and
years.
And it doesn't even honestly take that long.
It doesn't.
It takes a year.
Yeah, it takes a year, and then
you're going to eat ramen for a year, and you're going to move on.
It takes a year. Like, if you don't have your referral partners dialed in within a year, you're not calling on enough referral partners.
Yeah, you're not
and
doing
that
it.
Is period.
Or you're not going to cut it in this industry.
The beautiful synergy or the idealistic place to land with referral partners is when you're being referred to other referral partners through your current ones.
Yeah.
And they call you.
Yeah.
Oh, I heard John or John told me that you are the man, like for insurance, and I have to
work
with
you. Well, John is very intelligent. Thank you for calling.
It's true. Amazing. I think if you're an agent listening and you're you know struggling with referral partners or new to creating those networks, it's not forever, man. Like, you can get out of bed and run hard for at least a year to get yourself set up to be Ryan Mulhern, and that's what I want to be.
Not Sean Mulhern.
No way.
You don't want my life.
Sean, in your top months, how many leads were you getting on personal lines, would you say? Like, what was your highest volume of leads?
I mean, I would average at least 50 to 80.
By the way, shooting for about 30 is, or 30 to 50.
I mean, can agents handle more than 30, really?
That's a lot. That's a lot to deal with.
You're selling half.
With new tech, you probably can. But, you know, when you're calling and doing it all by paper and Excel. But I think my best month, I got 125 leads.
Jesus.
Brand new. Jesus. You know, so obviously you had to walk a ton of them. But
yeah. To that point, when did you make the decision to start scaling your team? Because I think I think agents struggle with that as well. They're like, well, I'm so maxed out on sales and service. There's no possible way that I could.
I mean, honestly, it was when you started pushing me. And then, you know, it was when, like, there was a couple months in a row where you were just like, you'd look at how many deals came in terms of quotes, and you're like, I'm trying to get to the quotes. And you had to walk business.
Or you weren't giving them attention.
Exactly. Like, you had no time to talk to them, and it was like, all right, I have to do something. So
Yeah. Well, man, I love talking about referral partners. This is nice, guys. I think we're going to ride on this for a while in a lot of these episodes because it's what we love best. Andy, it's what you love best.
It's just fun telling stories because we've been through tons of scenarios, and just turning around and giving that information to people is always cool because then you can hear back from them on their experience. It's nice.
Yeah, man. It's like that aha moment they get when they find something that works for them.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man, it works. I'm doing it. I'm making money. I'm growing. And now I am ready to hire and scale my team.
And, you know, admittedly, we've been out of that side of it for a couple of years now, so it'd be interesting to kind of hear their feedback on what else is new, what else is going on. That way we can share it with everyone, too. So.
Yeah, what other blockers are we seeing? So we're going to tackle this, I think, quite a bit. I love it. You love it.
Nice.
Sean's good at it. Yeah, expect more from us on the marketing side for sure.
All right, cease and desist.
Yeah, buddy, we did it.
Have a lovely day.